welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai. 30 years. What a great team this is.
I couldn't do this show without the great work of George Briones and the great Steve Paulette working behind the scenes. What a joy to come at you through the radio waves each and every Saturday. Almost 7 years now. Can't believe it. Hundreds of shows. And right now I'm being joined by a man who's going to inspire all of us with his journey and his life, the great Jay Blake. Jay, thanks so much for waking up early to be with us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Oh.
On the East Coast, I didn't have to wake up early at all.
Jay Blake, you're just... I'm a surgeon. I'm a surgeon because my dad was a carpenter. Working with tools is the real thing that gets me going as well. The greatest moment in my life with my dad was the day he discovered at the lumberyard. He didn't go to college. He went to the lumberyard and he discovered the Milwaukee Sawzall. So he didn't have to use a hammer and a chisel to make the cutout in the wooden stud to put the outlet box. He can, in 5 seconds, go zip, zip with the Milwaukee Sawzall. And I saw the expression on my dad's face that a tool could make him so happy. And he said to me, Robbie, it saves 10 minutes in my life. And I said, okay, I have to find out everything I can about tools, the happiness that a tool brings to life. And that's why I became a surgeon, Jay Blake. You love tools as well. Tell us about what it's like to pick up a tool.
I do love tools. I just have one question before we proceed.
Yes.
You don't use a Sawzall, do you?
I not only use a Sawzall in surgery, and we use the Milwaukee Sawzall version of it, but it led me, Jay Blake, to say, why is this tool such a crappy one? We need a better one. And I have patents. I've invented tools that are used all over the world. Even there on the East Coast, they're using my tools as we speak in the operating room at the hospital near your house because of that Milwaukee Sawzall inspiring me. So, yes, we use those very – we use Snap-on tools. When we have broken screws from a fracture, how the hell are we going to get it out of the bone without trashing the bone? We use the tools you and your guys developed for auto racing.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. All right.
There's
There's nothing like a Snap-on tool. So I just got a – I don't know if you do Twitter, but I just got a tweet from Gail Anderson, who's a really beloved newscaster here in Los Angeles, who said – because I asked people, what would you like me to ask the great Jay Blake? And she said, ask him what kept him going. What pushed him to be going, to persevere through this tragedy almost 20 years ago?
Well, first of all, it's not the great Jay Blake. I'm just Jay Blake.
Okay, yes, you are to us. You're the great Jay Blake to us.
Well, when I had my accident, I don't remember anything.
Wow.
And the first thing I remember is I woke up. And I describe it like being inside a cloud. It was incredibly white and incredibly bright, but not a blinding bright. It was just bright. And it was the most incredible, amazing, unbelievable peacefulness. The serenity was, you trip over words trying to describe it, and you really can't because it was so incredible. And a voice, a male voice said to me, do you want to stay or do you want to go? And I said, I am married and I have 2 children. I have to go. And the next thing I remember is I was awake and my brother was at my side. And I said, am I alive? And he said, yes. And I said, am I blind? And he said, we think so. I still had my right eye that they tried to repair, but that was unsuccessful. And I am, you know, I believe in God, but I am not a, you know, stout Bible-preaching person.
Right.
But I believe I had a choice, and I credit a lot of it to that moment. The other enormous moment was I was home, and I don't really remember, but it was probably, I guess, within the first 2 months of being home, maybe a little longer, and I was in a very bad spot, and I was leaning against the counter in the kitchen, right where the dishwasher was, and in my head, I'm thinking, did I make the right choice? Should I have just bailed at that moment? Should I have just not woke up? This just sucks. And out of nowhere, my six-year-old daughter came running across the family room into the kitchen. She's a little thing. She grabbed my legs, gave me this huge hug, and she goes, "Daddy, I am so glad you're alive, even though you're blind." And at that moment, I never questioned it ever again.
You know,
so you, I have a little phrase about blindness called "it sucks."
Yeah,
because it really does.
Yeah,
but I can't fix it.
Right,
and I can't change it, and so I've chosen to accept it.
Yeah.
And there are things in life that happen to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our choice. Are we going to accept them and move on, or are we just going to be miserable forever?
Yep.
And I'm not going to be miserable forever. I'm incredibly lucky to be alive. And, you know, life's changed a lot since that day, but it's... I'm incredibly lucky to do what I do and have, you know, family and friends and a race team, and life's pretty awesome.
But since you lost your sight, you actually now have fine-tuned to the highest degree that distinction, right, between softly touching and harder touching, that the nerve can distinguish between the two, correct?
Yes. It's amazing. And I could talk to you for hours about how the brain adapts and learns so much, but it's amazing how your brain adapts. You know, I went to work one morning. I drove to work. Everything was fine. And the next thing I remember, I live in a world of darkness.
Wow.
And just how my brain has adapted to its new environment is unbelievable.
Wow. I'm joined right now by the great Jay Blake. What's it like to feel the crowd when you go to the race? Do you feel, when I go to the Laker games and when we had the great Kobe Bryant and you felt 17,000 people breathing at the same rate as he did yet another amazing thing with the basketball, when an entire crowd behaves as a single person, what is it that you feel? Can you articulate what it's like now that you have this hyper sense of reality?
Well, as a motivational speaker, you feel the crowd and you get a lot more feedback from the crowd when I'm speaking.
Hmm.
When we are at the racetrack and standing on the starting line and, you know, 8,000 horsepower, you're standing between it and it's just there, you really, the cars overwhelm everything else.
Hmm.
And, you know, you're there with the car and your team, and a lot of the times, you know, you don't necessarily see the crowd just because you're concentrating so much on the race car and everything you've done. Now, when the car makes a great run and you win, then you hear the crowd, and that's an awesome feeling.
I bet you. Tell me if I'm wrong. You're now at the starting line with Richard Safran, and I want to thank him for making you happen today on the show and for taking me last Sunday to experience something I'd never experienced before, what it's like to be around 8,000 horsepower at the starting line. But can, okay, so there's two cars on the track. They're racing against each other. One of them is yours, and one of them is the other guy. How do you, at what point do you know it's your car that just won? How do you tell?
I have somebody that stands next to me that tells me what's going on, but you can also tell by the reactions of your team or the other team.
Wow.
And that's, you know, you're just adapting. You're using your ears to compensate.
You know, as a surgeon, I have to see with my left hand deep inside someone's hip. I can't see. Even with fiber optics, I can't see. I've got to stick my index finger around the lip of the bony socket and feel where the sciatic nerve is so that I stay away from it. I've got to teach myself, and that's the one thing I would tell you after 30 years of being an orthopedic surgeon, and what I teach the residents, you got to learn how to make that left hand of yours be your eyes deep inside the wound. What would you as a mechanic, first of all, is there one finger that you've learned of your 10 fingers that's most important?
It all depends on the situation you're in. So I'd say probably not. I'm a right-handed person, so I'd lead more to my right hand.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, depending on the situation. But I'd say it's probably more my right hand.
I'm joined right now by the great Jay Blake. When I was a kid, Jay, I went to visit my classmate in high school, Vic Micaretti, and his dad owned a gas station. And I'll never forget this. I'm just walking around appreciating the engines coming apart and all the rest of it. And all of a sudden, a car came onto the gas station lot. And my friend's dad, this master mechanic, I'll never forget, this car is like not backfiring, but whatever, coming on, and he screams out, "It's your number 6 spark plug." Like, I looked at my friend and I said, "Your dad can hear the engine and he knows exactly what is going." It was my first experience, forget about doctor, but making a diagnosis by hearing. You probably, at this point, can just hear the engine and know that it's tuned properly more than any computer, right? I mean, your sense of timing is just off the charts, correct?
You can hear things and you can diagnose things by hearing. Mm-hmm. Yes, you absolutely can. But I'm not sure it takes the place of a computer.
Yeah.
Okay. Not in today's world.
You know what is so special about you, Jay, is you're such a realist. Listen, I know it wasn't early to wake up, but man, this has got to be one of the greatest talks. Of all the motivational speaking engagements you've given to all the kids, is there one particular thing a kid said to you that really made it all worth it to you?
You know, I'm humbled to say that at this point there's been a variety.
Mm-hmm.
I know one guy. There are two stories that stick out exponentially. I visited Walter Reed Army Hospital many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I believe he was a captain, and he had lost an arm and maybe a leg, I forget. And I was talking with him, and he was in tears because of the frustration, but because of our talk, and he was on his way to PT, if I remember right, and, you know, he was just moved by what we were talking about, and I couldn't relate to his loss, but we could both relate to the loss.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I got my arms and my legs. I don't have eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have an arm and he's got eyes. But so we bonded, and it made such an impression on him and encouraged him that he wasn't, you know, my brother told me later that he had tears rolling down his face. That's the only way I know. And it was just amazing. You know, we can do crazy things like race crazy hot rods in this country because of the men and women that sacrificed for our freedom. Right. And it was just amazing to be able to give back like that. And then the other story, actually a friend of mine, and he lost his wife, and he was just frustrated and overwhelmed and figured, what the hell is there to live for? And he kept driving around trying to find something to drive into or do something. And he had a few choice words for me. He goes, and all I kept seeing was your face. Mm. And you know, he went back home and moved on with his life. And, you know, I was just a regular kid in high school who didn't want to be there, and I just wanted to go work on race cars and work on cars. And it's turned out the way it is. And
well, you're really special, Jay Blake. The great Jay Blake. I want to thank you for joining us today. It's a real treat. You're really, a lot of people listen to this show, and I really can't thank you enough. You've inspired all of us, and Thanksgiving is coming up. I can't think of a better way to celebrate Thanksgiving than to talk to someone like you. Thanks so much for getting up early with us.
Thank you. You know, we all have to remember to be grateful, and any of those guys from Brad Anderson who build our motors, our cylinder heads and blocks out there in Ontario, I say hi to them. But I just want everybody to remember, do not let your fear stop you. Let your dreams drive you.
God bless you, Jay Blake. Thanks so much for getting up early. All right, Warriors.
So you're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710.
Let's go to Christine in Alhambra. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Okay. Dr. Clapper.
Magandang umaga.
Oh, magandang umaga po.
Umiihi bang pasyente mo?
What do you mean, umiihi? Urine? I got you.
I work with a lot of nurses, and the best ones come from the Philippines, so God bless you guys.
Yeah, I heard a lot that you speak Tagalog.
I have to. Is my patient peeing? I have to learn how to say that. Umiihi bang pasyente mo.
Oh, my God.
Gusto kong umuwina, but at 9 o'clock.
Wow, you have learned a lot of Tagalog, huh?
Yes, and I love pandesals with cream cheese, except they have weed in them now. I can't eat them anymore.
Yeah.
Once a month, I can have it. All right, how can I help you, Christine? We only have a few minutes.
Okay, I have a low back pain, okay? Yes. I have my MRI in front of me.
So read just the impression. You see where the paragraph says impression?
Okay,
at the bottom.
Let me look.
Read at the bottom.
Okay.
Impression.
Yeah, I have it here. Impression.
Read slowly.
Okay. So if you don't mind, because I have a difficult of pronounce the medical terms. Okay.
You do. Listen, one thing, Christine, you don't have to apologize for on this show is your accent. Do you ever hear me talk? Forget about it. Get out of here.
Okay. Now I'm starting. Multi-level.
Okay.
Degenerative. These changes.
Okay, that's because you're 80 years old. So your spine has a clapper vision. You know what a clapper vision is, Christine?
Come again?
Okay, so you don't know what a clapper vision is. I'm going to tell you what's going on, but I'm going to use pretty words for you to understand. So you know what an Oreo cookie is?
Yeah, I know.
And when you go to the store and you buy a package of Oreo cookies, they don't just sell you one cookie. They sell you a package, but the Oreo cookies are stacked, right? In a column. Your spine is like the stack of Oreo cookies. The bone is the cookie, and the cream filling is the disc. Your spine, the bone is the cookie, the disc is the cream filling. It's as though you and I took the stack of Oreo cookies and pushed on top onto the table and tried to squeeze all of the cookies into one. The cookies will start to crack. The cream will go in all different directions. This is what your spine looks like. Multiple levels, multiple cookies with degenerative disease. So they're all fragmented. Are you going to have surgery 80 years old on this? No. Are you going to have an epidural or cortisone? No. What's the best way for you to take care of your back pain?
pain from all this arthritis that you have. The best thing for you to do, Christine, is walk in the swimming pool. It's the summer. It just started. It's my favorite time of the year because I get to go in the ocean without a wetsuit. You go to a swimming pool, belly button high water, walk forwards, then walk backwards. Don't turn around. Walk forwards, walk backwards for a half an hour, forwards and backwards, but do it 3 days a week. And you're not going to feel better, Christine, in 2 weeks. Don't quit. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. In a month, you're going to feel so much better because the weightlessness of being in the water, the resistance against the water makes your muscles stronger. It unloads the spine. It's the best way for you to make yourself not only get the pain to go away, but to keep it from coming back again. Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. Salamat, Christine, and have a great day. God bless you. All right.
Okay. That's all. That's all. I read.
That's all you need. That's all you need, young lady. And carry on. God bless
you. Thank you very, very much. Okay, Dr. Clapper.
You're very welcome. And you can have a Pondasol, but only once a month with cream cheese. Okay. All right. Let's quickly take a quick call. Let's go to Mary in Garden Grove. You're on with Dr. Clapper. I got a minute.
Hello.
Hi, Mary. I only got a minute. What's up with you?
Well, my right hip has been bothering me for about a year and a half to 2 years. It's a sharp stabbing pain.
How young are you?
I'm 55.
55. Groin pain, side of the hip pain, or buttock pain? Groin pain?
Groin pain, like just medial to my hip bone.
Okay. So classically, that is the ball and socket joint. Have you had an x-ray?
I've had an x-ray. I've had an MRI with contrast.
Did they say you have arthritis?
No arthritis.
No arthritis. Interesting.
No arthritis.
All right. So what's the diagnosis they gave you?
He was puzzled by it, so he asked me if I would be willing to do a cortisone injection.
No.
In order for him to try to diagnose
Not if your MRI is normal. There's no point in doing a cortisone shot. If you had an MRI and it shows nothing's up, then you have to seriously start to think about, is your spine the culprit here? Have they done an MRI of your lower back?
No, they have not.
You tell them that that's what you have to do next, and then I want you to do me a favor. I want you to call me back because I only have a minute. I don't want to cut you short. You get an MRI of your lower back, and you'll need to call in, and I need both MRIs, and we're going to read both impressions and findings, and I'm going to explain to you what's going on with your hip. There's a book I wrote with Linda Yui called Heal Your Hips. Get a copy. Okay, do the pool exercises to try to help, but get an MRI of your lower back, and then I need you to call me back. Okay, Mary?
All righty.
All right. Thanks so much for understanding. I appreciate it. All right, Warriors. Coming up next, I'm going to tell some stories, which is what I love to do. That's really what I am. I'm a storyteller. In art, in medicine, and in sports. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Wow. This is a song. This is a singer. These are words. Now, why would I be playing a song about fever? Because if you got one, you need a doctor. And I can't wait to talk to my guest, the great Dr. William Davis. William, thanks so much for waking up early to be with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, I got to thank you. For the last 2 months, you're talking to a guy who's, I'm from New York. Pizza is a religion to me. And I read your book. A patient of mine told me about it. And I have a wetsuit on. I look down at my belly as I'm waiting for the waves to come. And I see my belly's disappearing over these last 2 months, not eating wheat. From the bottom of my heart and my belly, I want to thank you, Dr. Davis, for writing this book. It's unbelievable. So
that's great. And, you know, you can still have pizza. Just got to make it a little different.
I know. I'm not doing that. It's all or nothing for me. But I want to ask you, first, I want to learn who you are. First of all, where did you grow up? What did your dad do for a living? Why did you pick, of all things, cardiology to go into? To me, orthopedic surgery was it, because my father was a carpenter. Tell us your story.
I grew up in New Jersey, not too far from you.
Oh, wow.
And with a single mom. Mm-hmm. But my mom was the one who taught me a lot of these lessons because she died of sudden cardiac death just a few months after her successful two-vessel coronary angioplasty. Mm. And I was an interventional cardiologist doing atherectomies and implanting stents and doing angioplasty, all that kind of stuff in the cath lab. Mm. But it drove home to me how pointless, how inadequate the procedural approach to heart disease was. That's why I started to set out for better answers, and it led me down this path.
Hmm. Interesting. This is very contrary to what the drug companies and organized medicine is all about, because there's no money in prevention. The money is in doing the procedure to cure it.
You put your finger on the essential fact, that is, healthcare has to pay, and it has to pay big. And if you wipe out heart disease, if you could put a stop to heart attacks and need for procedures and bypass surgery, you know, these are the things that pay 50% of the revenues for most hospitals. You'd wipe these operations out. This is big money we're talking about, the statin drug industry, procedures, et cetera. But you know, the truth of it is, heart disease is extremely easy to put a stop to. It's easy. It's take out grains and sugars, the things that provoke the most common cause for heart disease, which is an excess of small LDL particles, which is misconstrued as high LDL cholesterol. So it's purposely misconstrued because it pays better.
Yeah.
But it's easy as removing grains and sugars that reduce inflammation, and then taking a few extra steps. We do things like supplement vitamin D and fish oil and cultivate your bowel flora. And you know what? You have magnificent results like the ones you're beginning to enjoy.
You know, I'm an orthopedic surgeon, so how many people come to me? They're incredibly overweight. Dr. Clapper, if you fix my hip and my knee or my knee, then I can exercise and I'll lose the weight. No, you don't lose weight from exercise. You lose weight from calories. And what I need to teach and break it down, and you're great at this, that your sugar, I need you to teach my audience, our audience now, because you're a part of the family now, Dr. Davis, the difference between a Snicker bar and the sugar that you will bump in your blood versus two pieces of whole wheat, whole grain bread, how the bread is worse than the Snicker bar. Teach us what the glycemic index is.
This is great. I'm hearing this from an orthopedic surgeon. But absolutely right. Exercise is a miserable way to try to gain control over weight.
Right.
It's all about diet. Diet is everything in managing weight. And that's why we have one of the world's fattest populations on this planet ever in the history of mankind. Because the USDA and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services saw fit to support agribusiness rather than the health of Americans.
So teach us about the glycemic index. To break this down for us, so what happens when I eat what I think is going to be right? I'm going to have raisin bran or I'm going to have whole wheat toast and how that's worse than a Snicker bar. Teach us what the glycemic index means. Break it down simple, the medical term.
Sure. So glycemic index is nothing more than a value assigned to describe how high blood sugar goes over 90 minutes after you consume some foods. What's not often told, even though we're told to eat plenty of healthy whole grains, they didn't tell you that the glycemic index, that is the capacity to raise blood sugar, for whole grains is among the highest of all foods. And the reason for that is, despite the fiber, the carbohydrate in grains is called amylopectin A. And humans have an enzyme in their saliva and in their stomach called amylase. And it's very effective at breaking down amylopectin A, such that if you just put a piece of bread in your mouth, without even chewing it, without even swallowing it, your blood sugar starts to go way high. And so when you eat a diet rich in healthy whole grains and low in fat, that is a formula for obesity, type 2 diabetes, arthritis, right, because of degradation of cartilage tissue, that's from the high blood sugars, and a whole host of other inflammatory diseases. And so the nationwide advice to cut fat, eat more healthy whole grains, is a surefire formula for degrading the health of Americans.
Teach us about ancient wheat versus this Dr. Borlaug, the white coat lab scientist who in the 50s, thinking he's helping the world, designs a Frankenstein wheat for third world countries, and it's a dwarf wheat. So this is why we're going to play the music from Isaac Hayes called Shaft, because the shaft of the wheat got smaller so they can harvest it better and it kills pests or doesn't die from pests or drought. Teach us about ancient wheat, Dr. Borlaug, and the history of the manipulation of our food.
Yeah, so all your listeners need to do is go out into the countryside, maybe not in California, but in Kansas or Ohio or Wisconsin, and you'll see if you look for wheat fields, you have to look hard because wheat is now about a foot tall or a foot and a half tall. It is the high-yield semi-dwarf creation of a laboratory. And as you point out, Dr. Norman Borlaug was the geneticist, the agricultural scientist, who essentially concocted this stuff in the 50s and 60s. And now he did it for good purpose. He was not a bad man. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. He was called the father of agribusiness. He developed this high-yield semi-dwarf strain of wheat. He did it for increased yield. And there have been subsequent changes introduced such that modern wheat is nothing like the wheat of our ancestors. But not to say that heirloom or traditional strains that we aren't without their own problems. You know, when primitive humans 10,000 years ago first turned to the seeds of grasses, that's what grains are, they developed an explosion in tooth decay, tooth misalignment, a doubling of knee arthritis, iron deficiency. In other words, there's a very substantial health price to pay when we turned in desperation to the seeds of grasses. Really, it's been a mistake. But what agribusiness did in the last 50 years was simply amplify or exaggerate the unhealthy effects of grains because they changed it for their own agricultural purposes, not for health purposes.
This is a Wonder Bread commercial from 1952.
Here's how to help build strong bodies eight ways.
Eat Wonder Bread. You want to go bigger and stronger, don't you?
Golly, sure.
Okay. A sandwich daily and two slices of Wonder Bread every meal give you eight elements you need. As much muscle-building protein as roast beef. As much calcium for bones and teeth as cottage cheese. As much phosphorus for cell metabolism as this egg. As much iron for red blood as three lamb chops. As much vitamin B1 for appetite.
Can you imagine? This is how they're selling it in 1952. Tell us.
Yep.
Your book is amazing. I'm talking to the great Dr. William Davis, who wrote a book that's changed my life. I look down, I don't have a belly anymore. And it's because of the discipline involved. But I wouldn't have this discipline if it wasn't explained so beautifully in your book about the danger of wheat, how it affects insulin, which ultimately gives you this belly that stores estrogen. So the Seinfeld episode where men got breasts, gynecomastia, comes from wheat indirectly. How it affects schizophrenia, the hunger pains you have, and I'm an orthopedic surgeon. How much does knee pain and hip pain and weight bearing joint, your lower back, the inflammation you get comes from wheat. So take us through what happens. You're a scientist. You're a cardiologist. You're so knowledgeable about this. When you eat a slice of whole wheat bread, how does it end up on my belly fat?
So the high blood sugar that comes from that amylopectin A carbohydrate obliges a rise in insulin, a substantial rise in insulin. Every time you do that, because people are eating grains, right, three times a day, snacks in between, they provoke insulin. And those high insulin levels provoke growth of visceral fat. It causes weight gain, it blocks weight loss, and it's highly inflammatory. And when you get that belly, you know this, if you biopsy that belly, it's full of white blood cells. It's almost like pus. It's highly inflammatory. It itself is inflamed. It emits all these inflammatory mediators into the bloodstream. And so that weak belly, this collection of visceral fat, is highly inflammatory. And that's the setup for such things as dementia, and cancer, knee and hip arthritis, type 2 diabetes, heart disease. In other words, conventional advice to cut fat, eat more healthy whole grains is a recipe for health disaster. It is a nation of unhealthy, obese people created by standard or conventional health advice.
Dr. Davis, it's so important what you're doing to finally bring the house down. I mean, I applaud you, but hey, you got to have some thick skin, Dr. Davis. How are you holding up?
Well, I know this is right. That is, we know we have a predatory, profit-seeking healthcare system based on misinterpretations, misrepresentations. But the great thing about this is, if your listeners just peel back this onion and follow a handful of basic strategies, they have extraordinary control of their health. As you see, your belly fat dissolves, your bone health improves, your flexibility improves, your mood improves, your acid reflux can go away, your seborrheic psoriasis and eczema can disappear within days, acid reflux is gone, IBS symptoms are gone. In other words, people really do have extraordinary control, and so that's what fuels me, is watching the huge numbers of people now who are regaining control over health, getting slender like they should have been all along before the government got involved and big food and big agribusiness mucked up the story.
Here's what's even crazier, okay? I went to Columbia for college, Columbia for medical school. I trained at the hospital for special surgery. I went to Curl and Job and did my fellowship. Probably the greatest places you can go. Nobody ever told me that if you have hay fever, you don't like pollen, which is me. Why the hell would I be eating the very grass that I'm allergic to when I walk into a field and my eyes start to tear? But it's the case for everybody. Your body is telling you that with histamine. So instead of buying antihistamine,
instead of buying an anti-inflammatory drug, why or insulin, why not get rid of the reason your body's reacting to it, and then you don't need all these other drugs, but they can't sell those drugs. I mean, it's very clear what's going on. And to some extent, what you're doing is so bold, but I don't understand. Everything you say makes sense to me. Incredible.
Well, I'm so thrilled that you realize these things, because you're delivering a message to many people.
Yes.
And they're going to hear this.
Yes.
And, you know, here's an odd thing. Direct-to-consumer drug ads so now dominate advertising revenues for big media that you and I can't get on TV anymore with this kind of message because they're fearful of antagonizing their biggest advertisers now. So big media has abdicated their responsibility. That's why you see no negative reporting on healthcare on NBC, CBS, or ABC because they don't want to antagonize their advertisers. So what you're doing, what I'm doing, is so crucial because they're not going to hear it from the TV news or in-depth reporting, because there's no such thing on healthcare.
One of the chapters you write about is, and again, this is where they can come after you saying, what are you talking about? But how you talk about schizophrenia and the mental aspects that may these histamine and these allergic reactions to what we're eating can affect your mood and your whole personality. Give us a little history of schizophrenia and wheat.
Yeah, that's one of the most fascinating parts of this story. A lot of the initial insights into the harmful effects of wheat consumption came from schizophrenia research. There was a doctor who spent time in the wilds of New Guinea with a group of sociologists and anthropologists studying the behavior of 6,000 highland natives who never encountered Western culture. And they traded with these people. They traded beer and breads and cornbread for who knows what, spears and shrunken heads or something like that. And they watched one person in this population of 6,000 who had the overt signs of schizophrenia, which are pretty obvious, right? One person increased to 65-fold increase in paranoid schizophrenia. So this doctor, F. Curtis Doheny, brought it back to Philadelphia, where he practiced at the VA hospital. He did something extraordinary, he and colleagues. They operated a 40-bed unit of all of paranoid schizophrenics. It was a locked ward, so they could control food and coming and going and drugs. They took all wheat out of the diet of these paranoid schizophrenics, and over a four-week period, watched them improve. Less paranoia, less hallucinations, better engagement in conversation and socialization. They weren't cured. They were just better.
Unbelievable. Dr. Davis, because I don't have a lot of time, and on Twitter, you're lighting up on Twitter that I have. So someone named JP said, ask the wheat belly doctor again how wheat turns to fat. His previous answer was not clear. Take us through that.
So it's the provocation of insulin. That is, insulin goes high and it causes deposition of visceral fat. Now, it's actually worse than that. The gliadin protein of wheat, people say gluten, but a more precise way to think about it is gliadin. The gliadin protein of wheat breaks down the small pieces or peptides that act as opiates, and they stimulate appetite. That's why people who consume wheat never seem to be happy. Even with a full stomach, they're still grabbing at food. That's the gliadin-derived opiate peptide. Couple that with the high blood sugar, high insulin of the amylopectin A, and eating wheat is a surefire formula for weight gain and fat deposition.
And the fat is deposited because the insulin says to the body, put fat around my belly, because the insulin went up, because what the wheat is doing is driving up your sugar, because these building blocks ultimately create more sugar in your blood than eating a candy bar.
Absolutely. Okay. And then losing that fat is as easy as pushing away the muffin or the ciabatta.
Yeah, that's what I've done. For the last 2 months, I've done this, and it's unbelievable. I look down at my wetsuit, and I have a six-pack, and I cannot believe it. It's not like I did more abdominal training. I just don't have the fat in front of it anymore. You're all walking around with a rectus abdominis muscle, a six-pack. It's just hidden behind a mask of fat. It's incredible. Dr. Davis,
that's right.
I got to thank you for this is just a beautiful thing. You got me in your back pocket. If you need to promote something, talk about something, let me know. Your book is amazing. How can people learn more about you? You have a website?
There's lots more to read about this stuff in Wheat Belly blog, Wheat Belly Facebook page, on Doctor blog, on Doctor website. So if you just Google any of those things, you can't help but stumble on them. Well,
thanks so much for joining us.
You're doing great work. Keep it up.
Okay, thanks so much. The great Dr. William Davis. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show.
here on ESPN LA 710.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Steve Paulette, only you can come up with a way to talk about me talking about food. But food, let's talk about some food. So the bean dip that you use with your nachos that are homemade nachos at a place that's a family-run business for decades, I'm just revealing it to you right now, is my favorite Mexican food. The bar is unbelievable. The TVs are there. It is a transcendent Mexican restaurant. It's in Chatsworth, and it's called Los Toros, the Bulls. At least I think that's what it stands for. But then again, I told you, esposa means wife, and esposas are handcuffs. So me in Spanish, I'm not so sure. I think Los Toros are Bulls, but now I'll find out it means something else. My mouth is watering already. That bean dip, and you dip it into the salsa. You really don't need to, don't tell them I said this, but you don't need to order anything else. It's so good. But I have to tell you a funny story this week. I go to my favorite Thai restaurant in L.A., which really you should visit, although they don't need the business, on Sunset Boulevard. It's called Night Market. So my wife and I go to dinner. I'm sitting there, and I can't wait to get the papaya salad and the pad thai and all the great spicy stuff to eat. But I know already what's going to happen. The last time I ate there, I had 5 club sodas. 5! Because it's so spicy. So the waitress comes up. I kid you not. She has green hair, tattoos everywhere. Her body's completely pierced. Hi, can I help you? I said, yes, I can't wait to do the order. I want my papaya salad. I want the pad thai. No, I want the satay. I want all this stuff. She goes, okay, and what would you like to drink? I said, I would like 3 club sodas. She looks at me and she says, but there's only 2 of you. Why are you ordering 3 club sodas? I said, because I already know what's going to happen. She goes, 2 of you? 3 club sodas? She says, that's weird. And I'm looking at someone with green hair, body pierces everywhere, tattoos, telling me I'm weird. It's unbelievable. I started cracking up. You got to, God bless you. I guess it is weird to sit down 2 people and order 3 drinks. Have you ever done this, Steve Paulette? I guess it is weird. She's right. By the way, I drank all 3 club sodas. No, my wife had a little bit of it. I leave it with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying, which you know we, the two of us do each and every Saturday morning. Thanks for telling your friends. Until then, I'll see you on the radio.